Distinguished delegates, you may recall that 2 years ago, we witnessed the inauguration of His Royal Highness Prince Lauren as FAO Special Ambassador for Forests and the Environment. It is my particular privilege to invite now His Royal Highness to take the floor and address this session.
Excellency, Director General of the FAO, dear Mr. Da Silva, Excellencies, Minister, Excellency Ambassador and Representative, ladies and gentlemen, in short, dear friends. Allow me to begin with to express my solidarity with all the grieving family of Turkey and France after the dramatic events of the past few days. Please allow me also to thank the FAO for having invited me as Special Ambassador to address this 23rd session of the Committee on Forest here in Rome, and to share with you some of my thoughts. I would like to be more direct than an ambassador should be by immediately focusing on three specific points, accompanied by concrete suggestions. But before doing so, I want to give due recognition to progress which has been made in the past decade by the FAO and its partners in meeting the key challenges of our time, namely the availability of adequate food supply for a population that will continue to rise beyond the year 2050, and the need to protect and sustainably manage the world's natural resources, including the forest, of course. This progress and evolution in thinking are well reflected in the new 2016 FAO reports on the state of the world forest, which will be launched today, and for which I want to congratulate the Director General again, Mr. Da Silva, and his valuable staff. Allow me this morning to address you only three specific points. Firstly, the impact of a growing population is visible all around us, and in some region it is further complicated by the large-scale population migration that we have witnessed in the recent past. It is absolutely essential today that we consider the forest of the world as part of the answer that we as an international community wants to give to those problems of the 21st century. Forests must be part of the broad picture that integrates population and its needs, the availability of natural resources, and the condition of the environment. As indicated in the recent FAO report on the state of the world forest, these ecosystems play an essential role in the realization of several sustainable development objectives, notably those related to the elimination of poverty. In short, forests cannot be seen in isolation anymore. This does not only include the existing forests, but those that will grow in the coming decades. I mean, we need to invest in new techniques of plantation in arid desert areas of the world where it is so-called too expensive to plant. Forest and agriculture globally, and more specifically in those arid areas, as well as in semi-arid areas, are now inextricably linked. Nomads in desert areas are more and more settling down in great and greater urban areas. Their cultivation practices must be adapted. In these arid and semi-arid areas, where pastoralism practices are predominant, trees and forests are keys to the maintenance of soil fertility and stability. I am deeply convinced that in those rain-deficient areas, a boost to forestry activity can greatly contribute to the fixation of population, but also creating jobs and reducing uncontrolled migration. A recent visit that I have been able to do myself in Belgium, in a refugee center, has in addition shown that many of these people like to return to their roots and are willing to go back if stability and jobs are secured. Agriculture and agro-silvopastoralism practices will significantly contribute to those objectives. Allow me to say that women's contribution to this paradigm shift is of a great support. In other regions, agriculture is someone of the main cause of deforestation, and this is fundamental reason to develop positive interaction between forest and agriculture. In short, forest and agriculture should not be antagonistic anymore, but be considered together as part of the solution to problems related to land degradation, like, for example, reduction of land degradation, reduction of land fertility, and thirdly, an excessive greenhouse gas emission due to burning this forest. Unfortunately, as indicated again in the FAO recent report, in their national plans, few countries explicitly consider such an integrated approach to the use of their territories. I'm concerned that the same observation can be made at the international level. Allow me to recommend very highly that the FAO should continue to be a key actor in the adoption of a cross-sectoral approach, that is, from forest to agriculture and vice versa. I would like to welcome the horizontal links the COFO has created already with other bodies dealing with land and water conservation and agriculture, and promote further steps in this regard. Secondly, there is urgency in addressing forestry issues at their roots and in launching projects which are applicable technically. I'm thinking here of the Great Sahelian Greenbelt from Dakar to Djibouti, which must receive a more explicit political support from all beneficiary countries and other international donor groups. I have a very personal experience in Mauritania, where I have initiated and developed replanting of greenbelt around Nouakchott with the local support of the FAO at that time, as well as in the three regions of Libya. I must tell you, I'm very proud. Our Libyan plantations are visible today through satellite image. When extended to the whole Sahelian zone, such activity can positively affect the livelihood of millions of people who often live in areas of political unrest and precarious environmental conditions. I am more than ready, ladies and gentlemen, dear friend, I am more than ready to play my role as FAO Special Ambassador to support and be a catalyst of the Great Green Barrier Project and address authorities across the Sahelian Belt in view of obtaining a more explicit adhesion to this major ecological and environmental undertaking. To meet future demand for agricultural land and to improve food security in many nations, we must, without delay, planting now. Thirdly, and finally, today we should look with more attention to areas of the world where environment, forestry, and agriculture are not yet recognized at the international level, but deserve more scrutiny from the part of the FAO. FAO could act, sorry for my expression, as an environmental ambulance. The FAO could operate in areas of complete isolation. International sanctions are often leading to the complete isolation of a large group of people. I mean millions and millions of Earth citizens who are much more affected by such international sanctions than anyone else. Allow me to say to you today that as a European citizen, I feel very guilty and concerned about the fact that I can do today very little about it. I wish I could do much more in the future. Those populations could one day blame us and say, "What have you done to ameliorate our life condition?" In addition, I'm very concerned that for various reasons and in some region of the world, necessary projects cannot be implemented at all. Clearly, international organizations must be prepared to deal with a rising number of resource and environmental emergencies. More than any of those international organizations, the FAO, which is ultimately concerned with feeding the world, is the best position to pursue such an orientation. Let's become a green ambulance. May I ask you, ladies and gentlemen, excellencies, to consider that a green ambulance rescuing the environment when crises arise will be very beneficial to the rural population in many forgotten places of our globe. Again, I reiterate to you, as an FAO Special Ambassador, I assure you of my full dedication to such initiative and objective. To conclude, ladies and gentlemen, dear friend, I'm very much wants to quote someone I very much consider by saying, "Forests do not recognize border nor politics. All people deserve the same attention. Therefore, I call upon you all to leave no one behind." Thank you.
I thank Your Highness, particularly for your work as FAO Special Ambassador, and also for your ideas presented for consideration by this committee. Thank you, Your Highness. It is now my pleasure to invite our next speaker, His Excellency Vidar Helgesen, Minister for Climate and Environment of Norway. May I say, Minister, that we're very thankful for the enlightened policy of Norway and its generous contribution to the forestry sector. Thank you. You have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Your Royal Highness, Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, last year saw some remarkable achievements, as the Chair indeed started out today's meeting with pointing to. In a world that is often marked by polarization and stalemated multilateral processes, the world came together first behind the Sustainable Development Goals and the Agenda 2030, and then behind the Paris Agreement. Both achievements are truly global. The SDGs are goals for all countries, not only for developing countries, or rather, they make clear that we are actually all developing countries. The moment you stop developing, you die. We all need to be developing countries. The Paris Agreement, likewise, is the first truly global treaty to combat the truly global threat of climate change. Forests and land use are at the heart of both these landmark agreements. Forests represent 25-30% of the solution to climate change. Forests represent immense biodiversity needed to ensure that the world gets the food, feed, fuel, and fiber it needs for development. At times, I come to think that the only problem with forests is that they are not man-made. If forests had been man-made, the inventor would have received multiple Nobel Prizes. Medicine, economy, peace, at least, and been one of the biggest heroes of all time. But instead, today, man too often mismanages forests to the detriment of health, the economy, and peace and stability. Just think of food security. The current global trajectory of climate change and biodiversity loss means we're undermining future food security. Food security is obviously and basically about securing food, but the absence of food can also contribute to toppling governments and be a multiplier of threats to peace and stability. So forests, agriculture, and food are matters of high politics, and therefore forests cannot be managed in isolation. Ladies and gentlemen, biodiversity, as well as food security and agriculture, are priorities of the SDGs. The Paris Agreement also recognizes the fundamental priority of safeguarding food security and ending hunger, and the particular vulnerabilities of food production systems to the adverse effects of climate change. If the world is to feed 7 billion people, rising to over 9 billion by 2050, then it is imperative to produce sufficient, safe, and nutritious quality food for all in a way that keeps humanity's footprint within planetary boundaries. And when I say within planetary boundaries, one of the key boundaries we need to respect is that between agricultural lands and the world's remaining forest areas. Agriculture is currently the key driver of global deforestation. This must change. Unless the enormous emissions caused by deforestation are rapidly halted, it will be impossible to avoid global warming beyond 2 degrees, not to speak of the aspirational goal of 1.5 degrees. At the same time, I fully recognize the complexities we're facing. I have met business leaders and politicians who have argued that the activities that you call drivers of deforestation are also drivers of growth. Our common challenge, therefore, is to demonstrate that the protection of the world's forests can go hand in hand with food security, increased welfare, and green economic growth. Is it possible? Yes, it is possible. It will not be easy, but the alternative pathway will lead to major future difficulties, disruptions, and disasters. The FAO can play a key role in assisting countries in developing the necessary integrated approach to land use. This will be indispensable to facilitate the production of deforestation-free food, feed, fuel, and fiber, all while maintaining ecosystem services. The thematic focus of this meeting demonstrates that the FAO is mobilizing to take on this daunting task. Working together, sharing experiences, and integrating work streams will be important to achieve success. Norway's closest partner in the Norwegian International Climate and Forest Initiative, Brazil, has had success in this respect. They've done so by drawing on a wide basket of measures. I noted with particular interest in the document on the state of the world's forests that over the last 25 years, it has been possible to increase agricultural production and improve food security without compromising forest cover in 23 countries. That 7 of these countries did this through economic reform is important information. It will be important for the FAO to further disseminate this information, and I challenge you to integrate the lessons learned across the entire organization. The private sector is a critically important part of the mosaic of action in this field. I'm a firm believer in the positive role the private sector can play in solving societal challenges. And I'm encouraged by the rapidly growing number of companies, including many of the giant agribusiness and consumer goods companies, that are committing to exclude deforestation from their value chains. Governments should recognize this business trend as an invitation to strengthen forest and land use regulation. Responsible business actors are asking for a level playing field, a playing field where deforestation-free production is the norm. This represents the perfect setting for private-public partnerships for deforestation-free landscapes. In such partnerships, the public sector should provide the regulatory framework, enforcement capacity, and economic incentives. The private sector will invest, create jobs, profit, and taxable revenue for the public sector. The Tropical Forest Alliance, which Norway is proud to support, seated at the World Economic Forum, has been established to foster exactly such partnerships. Ladies and gentlemen, through our International Climate and Forest Initiative, Norway is supporting a wide range of initiatives aimed at reducing carbon emissions caused by deforestation and forest degradation in developing countries. The FAO is a key partner in this work through the UN RED program. We look forward to continuing this cooperation. My government intends to continue our efforts and investments in this initiative at the current level until 2020, and in Paris we announced that our climate and forest efforts will continue until 2030. The objective is sustainable food production systems. This was the focus of the Trondheim conference hosted by Norway earlier this year. It includes silviculture, which must respect the carrying capacity of its local ecosystem and recognize that soils, biodiversity and water are among the planet's most vital resources. Continued land degradation is not a viable option. Nature's capital will lose its innate resilience, and before long, our human economic capital and economic systems will also begin to lose their resilience. We will work with FAO, and we will work with Mexico as hosts of the CBD COP13 later this year, among others, to follow up on the outcomes of the Trondheim conference. Those outcomes, along with the outcomes of your work, are all pieces which, when put together, will enable us to achieve the Sustainable Development Goals and make progress on implementing the Paris Agreement. I wish you a fruitful and successful committee meeting. I trust that you will not shy away from addressing the big questions in your deliberations and that it will inspire us all. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I would now like to invite His Excellency Rafael Paciano Alemán, Minister for Environment and Natural Resources of Mexico, to take the floor.
Thank you very much, Your Royal Highness, Your Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen. First of all, I would like to thank you for the opportunity to share with you, on behalf of the Mexican government and on behalf of President Peña Nieto, that our country will host between December the 2nd and December the 17th, as it was mentioned by the Minister of Norway, we will be hosting the COP13 of the CBD, and obviously we would like to share an invitation to you. Now, if you allow me, I would like to switch to Spanish to go through a very quick presentation. La biodiversidad tiene una estrecha relación con el bienestar humano, ya que provee bienes y servicios que son indispensables, tales como son el oxígeno, el agua, los alimentos, energía, medicinas, fibras, materias primas y también protección contra plagas y enfermedades, entre otras cosas. Los bosques cubren un tercio de la superficie terrestre del planeta y de ellos dependen alrededor de 1.600 millones de personas. Económicamente, en algunos países los bosques representan más del 10% de su Producto Interno Bruto. Se estima que en el sector forestal formal se emplean cerca de 13 millones de personas alrededor del mundo, pero que también al menos 41 millones de personas trabajan en el sector informal. Actualmente enfrentamos un reto enorme sobre la pérdida de biodiversidad a nivel del mundo. Y esto compromete sin duda a las generaciones presentes, pero también a las generaciones futuras. A finales del 2014, la cuarta edición de la Perspectiva Mundial sobre Diversidad Biológica reconoció que a pesar de que se han realizado diferentes avances y algunos de ellos significativos en el cumplimiento de las metas de Aichi, estos avances resultarán insuficientes y requerimos que se tomen medidas adicionales para cumplir con el Plan Estratégico para la Diversidad Biológica 2011-2020. Un ejemplo de esto es que la superficie forestal total disminuyó en las últimas décadas cerca de un 3% y anualmente se deforestan en el mundo poco más de 13 millones de hectáreas. En este sentido, es importante redoblar esfuerzos que nos permitan alcanzar las metas internacionales de diversidad biológica y para esto requerimos lo siguiente: una mayor coordinación entre las políticas públicas y los actores de la sociedad, crear mayores sinergias entre acuerdos internacionales sobre medio ambiente, específicamente sobre cambio climático, biodiversidad y desertificación. Y también tener una mejor contabilización y eficiencia en el uso de recursos financieros que sean destinados a la biodiversidad. Como muestra del compromiso que tiene México con la biodiversidad, entre el 2 y el 17 de diciembre hospedaremos la 13ª reunión de la Conferencia de las Partes, la COP13 del Convenio de Diversidad Biológica, la 8ª Conferencia de las Partes del Convenio de Cartagena y la 2ª Conferencia de las Partes del Protocolo de Nagoya. El lema de la COP13 lo definimos como integrando la biodiversidad para el bienestar, porque creemos firmemente que tal como se plasmó en la Agenda 2030, sí se puede alcanzar un balance adecuado entre prosperidad económica, desarrollo social y la sostenibilidad de los ecosistemas y su biodiversidad. Previo a la inauguración de la COP13, los días 2 y 3 de diciembre, organizaremos un segmento de alto nivel en donde por primera vez en la historia de este foro internacional estamos invitando, además de los ministros de Medio Ambiente, a los responsables de las carteras de 4 sectores que son fundamentales para la conservación y el uso sustentable de la biodiversidad. Estos sectores son el agrícola, el forestal, el pesquero y también el turístico. Me da mucho gusto compartir con ustedes que al día de hoy ya contamos con la confirmación de 70 ministros que nos acompañarán en este evento. Especialmente destaca la mesa forestal, tomando en cuenta que aproximadamente el 80% de la biodiversidad terrestre se encuentra en los bosques de nuestros planetas. Esta discusión constituye una valiosa oportunidad para compartir experiencias exitosas e influir y avanzar en la integración de criterios de biodiversidad en los sectores productivos que serán expresados todos ellos en una declaración ministerial. La integración de la biodiversidad en estos sectores implica el trabajo coordinado con responsables de la política en cada sector, una amplia colaboración con el sector privado y otros sectores, y también el poder identificar casos de éxito y mejores prácticas a nivel mundial. Para que logremos tener una reunión exitosa en Cancún, es fundamental la voluntad política y la colaboración de todos ustedes, de los pueblos indígenas y comunidades locales, de la academia, de la sociedad civil, del sector privado y de los gobiernos nacionales y también subnacionales. Les queremos solicitar de manera muy respetuosa puedan compartir con nosotros experiencias de éxito en la integración y de criterios de biodiversidad en las políticas sectoriales. El camino hacia la COP13 incluye diversas reuniones nacionales e internacionales que han preparado y continuarán preparando insumos para las decisiones que serán adoptadas en esta COP13. Un ejemplo es esta reunión del Comité Forestal, en donde reconocemos ampliamente el trabajo tan importante que realiza la FAO de manera específica en el sector forestal. La COP13 será una oportunidad para reconocer el papel integral de la biodiversidad en el funcionamiento de los ecosistemas forestales y tomar medidas urgentes para disminuir su pérdida, pero también para promover el uso sustentable mediante estrategias de mitigación y adaptación del cambio climático, el desarrollo de prácticas silvícolas sustentables, el fomento de incentivos para la conservación y también el uso sustentable de recursos forestales. Es un honor para México el ser sede de esta 13ª conferencia de las partes sobre el Convenio de Diversidad Biológica y esperamos poder contar con su valiosa participación en diciembre en Cancún. Muchas gracias.
I'll now give the floor to Dr. Ho Sing Lee, Chair of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Dr. Lee.
Thank you, Your Royal Highness, Excellencies, distinguished delegates, ladies and gentlemen. I'm very pleased to be here to share with you the perspective of the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, in the face of growing challenges of living within the planetary boundaries. The year 2015 was a landmark year in the global environmental agenda. The world agreed the Sustainable Development Goals and then came together at the 21st Conference of the Parties to the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change to reach an ambitious agreement on tackling climate change. This week in Rome, we are exploring ways in which forest and sustainable forest management can contribute to these global objectives. Today, I would like to concentrate on the Paris Agreement and the challenge for the implementation. In particular, I would like to look at how the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change is supporting government's effort to turn climate action into reality and the role of agriculture and forests in that work. For our treatment of forests holds one of the keys to tackling climate change. Among the many precious ecosystem services that the world's forests can offer us are sinks for carbon emissions. If we exploit or clear forests irresponsibly, we certainly exacerbate global warming. We can use trees to absorb carbon, but there are limits to afforestation. We need to land grow food as well. In Paris, nations set themselves the ambitious goal of holding global warming well below 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels and pursuing efforts to limit to 1.5 degrees. That goal will be reached not through top-down targets, but by nationally determined contributions set by each country. Parties to the convention will regularly monitor progress towards the goal and consider whether their contributions need to be ratcheted up. With a facilitative dialogue in 2018 and a first global stocktake in 2023, and every 5 years thereafter. That agreement reflects the findings of the IPCC assessment. Future IPCC reports will feed into the global strategic process, and our work plan will be aligned with it. The main findings of our last assessment, the fifth assessment report, are first, human activity is disrupting our climate. Second, the more we disrupt our climate, the more we risk severe, pervasive, and irreversible impacts. However, we can make the choice to limit climate change and build a more prosperous world. Specifically, on the subjects we are discussing this week, we found that in 2010, agriculture, forest, and other land uses, or known as AFOLU, AFOLU, in the climate change terminology, accounted for 24% of greenhouse gas emissions, second biggest contributor after energy. And yet, while overall emissions growth accelerated in the first decade of this century at 2.2% per year, which is double the trend rate, that was due to growth in all other sectors, not AFOLU, reflecting a slowdown in deforestation at that time. Mitigation strategies consistent with a likely, that is, two-thirds or more, chance of keeping warming below 2 degrees by the end of this century typically involve a temporary overshoot in concentrations of greenhouse gases. These scenarios then involve negative emissions, often relying on the availability of bioenergy with carbon capture and storage, known as BECCS, and afforestation in the second half of this century. However, the availability and scale of these technologies is very uncertain at this moment. These and other uncertainties will be examined in the next set of our assessments. We will start preparations of the sixth assessment report later this year, finishing in year 2022, in time for the first global stock take in 2023. In the meantime, we will update in 2019 methodologies by which countries measure and report their greenhouse gas emissions and removals, and produce three special reports. The first one is on the impacts of global warming of 1.5 degrees of pre-industrial levels and related global greenhouse gas emissions pathways. The second special report is on climate change, desertification, land degradation, sustainable land management, food security, and greenhouse gas fluxes and terrestrial ecosystems. This will be available in 2019. And third special report, that is on climate change and oceans and the cryosphere, also will be available in 2019. Each of these is highly relevant to this community. Our report on 1.5 degrees requested by the COP21 in Paris will increase our knowledge on the impact of ecosystems of holding warming to 1.5 degrees. At the time we produced our last assessment, AR5, there was relatively little scientific literature available on this for us to assess. And the sections on emissions pathways will consider the methods and technologies, including BECCS, BECCS, and afforestation, which might take us to that goal. The topics of land use report speak for themselves, and the report on oceans will have implications for fisheries and management and health of the maritime ecosystem services, among others. Reflecting the fact that we are now in the implementation phase of dealing with climate change, all of these reports will put a greater emphasis on solutions. At the same time, we need to close information gaps on the impact of climate change at the local and regional levels. The area of research of interest to this community that we will need to examine include work on negative emissions such as biomass combustion with CCS, biochar and biomass burial, ocean geoengineering, and solar radiation management. For the assessment report on land use issues, we need modeling of the potential location and scale of desertification and land degradation due to climate change. And we need to understand the increasingly complex dynamic interrelationships between climate, food production, and human security, including the potential for adaptation and impacts on migration. Before closing my remarks, let me highlight that failure to take action on climate change poses high risk of abrupt and irreversible regional scale changes in the composition, structure, and function of the terrestrial and freshwater ecosystems, leading to substantial additional climate change. Linkages among water, energy, food, feed, fiber, and climate are strongly related to land use and management, such as afforestation. Many of these interactions can compromise security of supplies of food, energy, and water. This nexus is increasingly recognized as critical to effective climate resilient pathway decision making. But tools to support local and regional scale assessment and decision support remains at this time very, very limited. We will lower this barrier through our upcoming assessment, sixth assessment. Agriculture and forestry lie at the heart of the efforts to understand and tackle climate change. We believe that contributions of FAO to this effort will be crucial for the success of the aspiration of global climate stabilization. Together, the science and policy communities can address this challenge. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Sung Lee.